Ron Culver.
All right, we're going to try to get you caught up with college basketball where it stands right now as we head into conference tournament weeks for some conferences this week and everybody else next week. And then, of course, Selection Sunday. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Nicole Arbuck joins us from The Athletic. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We have got to say before we start talking college hoops that Ron and I are both extremely jealous. You got a really cool Ted Lasso gift box, and we were wondering how that happened.
I'm not really too sure. I think I just tweeted about it a lot in the summer. I've been on a PR mailing list for Apple Plus for a while now.
Nice.
You know, I was tweeting about it when the show was still coming out once a week, and I think, you know, people just didn't buy it back then. They were like, listen, this is just a show based off a commercial. They didn't realize how amazing it was.
I'm with you. I've been saying that all along. When I obviously being a sports guy, and people have been telling me and asking me if I had seen it, and I said no because I felt like, I said, this seems like I know all the jokes. It's a guy who doesn't know soccer, and I can predict where this is going. I was 100% wrong. I was 100% wrong. There's a little bit of that, but it was so much more. It's an incredible show. Incredible show. So good for you getting the nice gift package. That was very, very nice. We were very envious seeing that on Twitter. Nicole, looking at college basketball, before we get to the nooks and crannies of the teams and who right now is making some news, give me your assessment of how the sport handled COVID, how the sport has dealt with it. Did it do a good job? A lot of cancellations. Is it doing a good job of making up for those games and presenting its product to America?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been, pretty disjointed. I think for probably a lot of casual fans, it was harder than usual to get into it. I mean, it was hard to even just tell who was playing and who was on a pause or not. But I think, you know, as we're getting closer and closer to actual March Madness and having the tournament, it's definitely clear that it's going to happen, and that there's contingency plans in place and potential replacement teams if needed. And, you know, it's very interesting, now that we're back in March, and, you know, obviously there's all those memes going around about March 2020 and March 2021 feeling, you know, very much like this endless time loop. But, you know, for a lot of people, I think that March Madness being canceled was really kind of the first big thing that we lost last year. And so I think that there will be, you know, yes, the fans will only be up to 25% capacity. And, you know, it's all going to be in the state of Indiana. You're not going to have kind of some of those regional quirks and elements of the tournament. But I do think having it at all will bring back a little bit of normalcy. You know, it's going to be at the right time of the calendar. You know, so many sporting events last year were kind of in the wrong time. It was hard to keep track of everything. So I think that Dan Gavitt and the NCAA deserve a lot of credit for, you know, having a plan and coming up with something in place and also trying to do this in a controlled environment in the state of Indiana and the greater Indianapolis region. I think that was a really smart plan. But I think as a whole, you know, you have to go conference by conference to figure out, you know, how they did in terms of the inventory, with making up games and how many games got played out of the overall total. Because, you know, I think just overall it was very team dependent. You know, I think in certain leagues did better. I think the Big Ten, you know, went a couple months, if I'm remembering correctly, without having to reschedule a game or having any COVID related issues on the men's side. You know, it's been interesting. It's been bumpy. I think that everyone will be very happy when the season is over and in. But I think just knowing that there is going to be an NCAA tournament, and that there's plans, you know, teams need to get replaced. I think that is smart and probably bringing a little bit of comfort to those who really need that NCAA tournament money, and not having it last year was probably, really damaging for athletic departments.
We know that on Selection Sunday, there's always going to be teams that you know people feel should get in and didn't get in. That's kind of the joy of breaking all of that down. But in this case, do you think there'll be a lot of conversation of teams that didn't get in because they didn't play enough games because of COVID? Or has there been a way to sort of balance out teams that are on the bubble based on, hey, look, you may have only played 20 games and this team played, you know, 26 games?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting, and I'd be very curious to hear, you know, from the selection committee afterwards, because, you know, right now we've only got, we got that, like, I don't even know what we call it, but like a peek in to the top four seed line. So you get the top 16 seeds, 16 teams, you know, kind of like a preview into, you know, how the selection committee is thinking and working. And that doesn't really, you know, kind of take that question into account because, you know, yes, there's differences in amount of games played for some of the top teams, but it's not looking at, you know, really flawed resumes like the bubble teams have. So it's definitely interesting because, like, in a normal year, you still have that argument about, you know, a mid-major team that doesn't have as many quad one opportunities versus, you know, kind of a mediocre power five team that has a lot of them but probably lost a lot of them, right? So yeah. I think, you know, it's that, but it's kind of on steroids, right? Because you have, you know, you're going to have different amounts of games. And we saw, obviously, how contentious that can be in college football season. I'm very curious to see how that shakes out in basketball. I think that you're not going to see, like, a team that only played 13 versus, like, 26, you know, in some of the things, the really extreme examples. But it's definitely going to be interesting in terms of, you know, like, okay, what does it mean in terms of quad one opportunities and things of that nature, how much the committee holds that against people when some of it, you know, are they going to hold it against somebody if the other team had a COVID issue and it wasn't their own fault? Like, is that going to be taken into consideration? We don't know exactly yet, but I do think they're probably going to have people kind of complaining about stuff like that that really was and legitimately was outside of their control.
Which conference, and there's two big ones right now, the Big Ten and the Big 12, that are just loaded with talented and ranked teams. In terms of the conference tournament, they can be fun. They may not lead to a lot of unanswered questions, but is either one of those conferences, are they going to be able to tell us even more about themselves during the conference tournament, or is it just sort of sit back and watch the excellence that's brewing in these two?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, depending on the coach and the team, you do in general, even in normal years, have different, you know, kind of perspectives on the conference tournament. I mean, I think there are some coaches that will kind of, like, very honestly, you know, off the record tell you that, like, the idea of playing four games in 4 days, winning, you know, potentially a tournament championship, but then, you know, what does that mean, you know, 4 days later, 5 days, 6 days later when you start March Madness?
Right.
You know, maybe they don't mind, you know, bowing out a little early. But I think, you know, in a year like this, I mean, I think, you know, getting more games of watching some of these, you know, Big Ten teams play each other night in and night out, you know, before we get to the NCAA tournament or the top half of the Big 12. I mean, I think that that's just going to be enjoyable. And I think, again, I really do think that this year it was it took even longer than usual, probably, for casual fans to start getting into it. So I do think you're going to learn a lot about these teams. I absolutely think, you know, a team like Baylor, you know, which had a pause very late in the regular season, I think, you know, people are still waiting to see them, you know, kind of really get their sea legs back and get their legs back under them. And, you know, and the conference tournament will be an opportunity to kind of to do that on a daily basis. And so I think it's going to be really fun. I think it's going to be, you know, again, for people who have taken a little bit longer to get back into it, you know, it'll be what gets you geared up for March. So I'm excited. I'm excited to watch both of those tournaments. You know, it's weird because the ACC is so, you know, kind of meh this year.
Yeah, right.
Usually you're talking about the top teams in the ACC as like one seeds. They're not like that this year. So it's almost like, you know, that's a tournament year in, year out, no matter what the circumstances, I do look forward to, right? Or, you know, you're going to have some amazing semifinals, championship games. You know, I'm not as excited about the ACC this year, but I'm still very excited about, you know, the Big Ten and the Big 12. I think they're still going to be fun, regardless of, you know, maybe if not everyone's able to play, you know, we still don't know, you know, exactly. I think everyone's going to try to play. But, you know, I just think it's going to be fun and it's going to gear us up. I think also teams, you know, like a Rutgers, like some of those teams that, you know, are having really good seasons, but getting overshadowed by the elite of the elite. It'll be fun to get those, to see those teams and decide if we want to buy into them, you know, when we get our brackets.
In terms of conferences like the SEC that's got Alabama in the top 10 and maybe Arkansas is even playing better than they are right now, but there was a time where Tennessee was in the top 20, but Missouri was in there, Florida was in there. It feels like now there's been so much attrition that those teams are not as good as we once thought. How deep can the SEC go come Selection Sunday?
Yeah, I think they're. I think that the thinking of, you know, maybe some of these teams aren't as good as we think, or maybe just that they peaked earlier in the season and you know aren't peaking now. I think that's accurate. I think this is the time of year where you're trying to figure out basically who you trust. It does matter a lot to these leagues. You know how many teams they get in. You know that affects conference. The payouts that they get from the leagues. But it's almost more interesting to think about, you know, like who do you trust to make the little run? Who can string together, you know, three or four wins? Who can go on a deep run? And, you know, right now in the SEC, I do think it's pretty limited. I mean, I think, you know, Alabama on the body of work all year, like you said, Arkansas, maybe, you know, the hottest team in the country or one of, and then, you know, you go from there. I do think that, you know, Missouri is a really interesting team. I think they, you know, we've seen a lot of, you've seen really great performances from them. You've seen them lay eggs. So they're going to be one that, you know, I'm still not decided, you know, how I'm going to treat them in my bracket. But it's definitely been an up and down, you know, season in that league. And it's hard, especially when a team like Kentucky is just not what they usually are. And that's the team that you usually measure everybody against.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about both Duke and Kentucky and their struggles this year and the lack of cohesiveness that they've been able to get early in the season, but there is some games under their belt. Does that excuse still fly? I mean, both schools have had a chance now to come together.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a topic of conversation because, it's something that we're not used to seeing. We're not used to Duke being squarely on the bubble,
right?
And probably needing, you know, a run in the ACC tournament to just get in. You know, Kentucky, we're not used to seeing. I've talked to other coaches at other schools about, you know, kind of these points that the coaches on those teams have made about the COVID year and how, you know, when you have a young team or you have when you build around one and done guys. Like, you really do need them to spend time with each other off the court, and that's part of the cohesion, that's part of the gel process, and they haven't been able to do that. I was talking to a head coach yesterday who was saying that, you know, he was trying to break up the monotony of, you know, they go to virtual school, they go to practice, and then they all kind of separate for the rest of the day. He was trying to break it up by trying to see if they could go bowling. And it was like, oh, you could have four people. They need to be separated by this much space, you know, for the next lane, this and this. And it was just like, it wasn't what he was trying to get out of the team bonding activity. And so I think that is an actual valid point. I think it's too soon to tell if, like, this is a major statement about one and done in general. Or, again, like, it just was exacerbated by the requirements needed to get through this season where you can't spend time with each other. I think things like the G League, having potentially or, you know, New Zealand, all these other places that are potentially other opportunities for like those top 10 one and done potential guys. Like, that's more of an existential threat to, you know, that type of recruiting, that type of building programs than I think one year like this. But it definitely is interesting that it's hitting them all kind of at the same time when they do build that way. But I do think that there is some truth to, like, it's not just an excuse when these coaches talk about things about, like, team bonding and, like, the time spent off the court actually mattering year in and year out.
Nicole, your work is fantastic at The Athletic. Really appreciate your time. Hope to catch you on again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Nicole Auerbach joining us, talking some college basketball, some very good points. We kind of will dissect a little bit of that, but I also got one throwback Thursday for you as well as we wrap up. Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.